towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Okay, you all know I'm a professor, so those that were here yesterday, it's a test. What was the big lesson? It was simple, but it was kind of the singular important lesson yesterday about happiness or unhappiness.
We control our thoughts.
Sort of. We wish we could.
Yeah. Yeah, we try to control it.
Anyone else? Yes. Raheem.
Wait long enough, it'll change.
That's true. Yes. Yeah. But our happiness or unhappiness is created by our thoughts. Okay, it's that simple. So we talked about doing, when we have those thoughts that are running away like a, whatever they might be running away like, sometimes the monkey mind, sometimes a locomotive, you know, derail them, do something different is a really good thing to do, you know. Give yourself a different view. Right? Take a trip. Go to the museum. Go take a walk. Sit still. All very helpful. Anything else? The practice? Anyone has anything to share? We worked with Aleem, and we're going to work with it again today, but in tandem with another Wazifa. But because our time is somewhat limited, again, we'll... Okay. So...
We have to take that off there.
No editing. Everything's as it is. So today we're going to read a little bit from Hazaradanai Khan. But it's Hazaradanai Khan giving commentary on... Do we want to open the circle up more? I mean, we can.
What's happening?
For those of us who weren't here yesterday, Aleem, would you remind us what Aleem...
We'll I'll go over it again. Yeah, I'm really good about reviews, too. Okay. Yeah, if you don't, you know, say it once, say it twice, say it three times. Inshallah, it'll go in. So this is from the Sufi Message, Volume 10 on Sufi Poetry. And it's on the Sufi poetry of Farid Adin Attar. Okay. So I just want to give you a little bit of Murshid, what he says about Farid Adin Attar, and then I think I'm going to probably give excerpts from what I had selected, which were excerpts of what was written anyway, but try to get to the distillation or essence of it. So Murshid says of Farid Adin Attar that he's one of the earliest Sufi poets of Persia. And he showed us the way to the ultimate aim of life by making a sort of picture in a poetic form, which we know how helpful that can be, metaphor and poetics. This method has been followed by poets of Persia and India, especially the Hindustani poets, and they have told their stories in a form which would be acceptable not only to the seekers after truth, but to those of all different stages of evolution. Attar's best known work is called, Ali Cotter,
The Conference of the Birds.
Okay. And from this comes the idea of the blue bird of the sky. Okay. So very few have understood the idea of the blue bird or the blue bird of the sky. We've also talked a little bit about when you start to understand or study Murshid's teachings, if you have any Buddhist inclinations or studies, you see that crop up sometimes in his teachings, and we're about to see that. So he says, it contains a very ancient teaching through the use of the Persian word sky. And you know, in Tibetan Buddhism, a lot of times we give that as a metaphor, sky-like awareness, you know, sky-like view. Okay. So really, here's the analogy. When we were all children, did you, like I, lay on the ground and look in the sky and think, where does it end? Like, and that's a Buddhist meditation. They often will be in small huts or caves, and all they will see, everything was very simple in that space, and there'll just be a slit, and all they see is the sky. That sky-like expanse of awareness, okay? Beautiful metaphor, and beautiful. You can experience that because you can even remember that as a child, that expansiveness. And we'll be working with some wazifas that will help us with that. So this teaching points out that every soul has a capacity, which may be called sky. And this capacity can accommodate the earth or heaven, or maybe the earth and heaven, whichever it partakes of and holds within itself. When one walks in a crowd, when one walks in a crowd, what does one see? One sees numerous faces, but one might better call them various attitudes. Interesting, isn't it? Identifying that quality, maybe, that's coming from within. Again, seek to see that which transpires behind that which appears. Just another quick, one time in retreat with Murshida Vera, the first thing she did was she made us make a mask. And it was a weekend retreat, as it was over Palm Sunday, and we had to make a mask that was attached to the stick. And we had to have that. We had to carry that with us the entire time. And of course, by the end of the retreat, the mask could come away. You know, it's really interesting when we think about what we might be projecting, but when that comes away, what's there? We talked about naked awareness, and when we're willing to tell our deepest, darkest thought or feeling or experience in public, well, there's nothing more. It's all out there. Just naked.
The black-hearted truth.
That's it. Thank you. So here's the point. He says, the point of fact, whatever one makes of oneself, one becomes that. Whatever one makes of oneself, one becomes that. The source of happiness or unhappiness is all in man himself. When he is unaware, we are unaware. When one is unaware of this, he is not able to arrange his life. But as he becomes more acquainted with this secret, he gains mastery. And the process by which this mastery is attained is the only fulfillment of the purpose of life. He said that a second time now, and he said it yesterday too. That this mastery is the only attainment, you know, in our the purpose of life, that this is the purpose of life. It is this process which is explained by Attar in his description of the seven valleys through which the bird of the sky has passed. I'm going to read just a little more, and then we're going to get back to the practice, because it's so amazing, this teaching. So, do you all know that teaching, by the way? Some of you have read it. The number seven is very mystical in a lot of traditions, and Sufism it is also. talk about the removal of seven veils, and so this is and levels of initiation. You know, there we have all of those in Sufism. So we're going to go through the valleys. We're going to cover a few today, and we're going to close tomorrow with the rest of them. But this is the valley of quest, right? So everyone, really, when you first come to Sufi camp, aren't you on some sort of quest? You're usually seeking something, right? And I tell you, sometimes it's because we've gone through some great challenge in our lives that we're drawn to come, right? We start to seek something more and beyond that. Is that not true? You two look so much alike. Same face, different bodies. I know, it's great. It's both beautiful. Thank you. Okay. So the first valley is the valley of quest. How true is it that every child is born with the tendency to search, to know?
Yeah.
What we call inquisitiveness or curiosity is born in each one of them, and it represents the inner feeling of quest. And as man is born with this tendency, he cannot be satisfied until by searching he has attained the knowledge he desires to have. There is no doubt that what prevents man from getting that knowledge, which his soul is really searching for, is himself. That we become an obstacle or an impediment in our own road. And I think sometimes when there are those obstacles, we really have to examine that, how we might be setting things up or perpetuating things within our own lives. You know, why does this always happen to me? Well, guess who's there all the time? Right? It's like, hello? Right? If everything else is changing and you're the constant. It is his small self always standing in the way that keeps him from searching for the only thing which every soul strives to find. Therefore, it would be safe to say that there is no one in the world who is his own worst enemy than man himself. Oh, I can't do that, or why should I, or they won't like me, or I shouldn't go try for that. What if I, you know, it goes on and on. We all know. So just this little bit too. He says, some people think that they can perhaps find this in science or from art or something like that, which is behind the manifestation. And again, what is transpiring behind that which appears? And surely, whether the quest be material or spiritual, in the end, one will arrive. It can also be a material quest. And you can learn from that. I remember one time Pir Vilayat saying, for example, in the education of a doctor, all the things that they learn along the way certainly takes them towards their profession, but it builds a mastery within them as well. And it's a spiritual quest as well, or it can be, because they're developing concentration and compassion and service. I mean, these are all qualities that also mold the character as well as learning skills and knowledge. So I think that's what Murshid is trying to refer to here. Scientists and engineers, people who are absorbed in research into material things, you hardly ever think of them, or they may not even think of spiritual matters. After much research, they arrive very close to the same knowledge, which is the ultimate knowledge. And we see that a lot now with these conversations. We were discussing that too yesterday between His Holiness the Dalai Lama and these neuroscientists and psychologists, where they're, you know, I mean, part of the impetus was to find where we really connect. You know, what are you describing from a scientific view, and how does that map onto the Buddhist cosmology? And they're finding there's a lot in common.
I write a lot about that because I science is sort of my area. Mm-hmm. And when you look at quantum physics now, you'll read a lot of work, especially on David Bohm.
Yes.
And when you read his work, you would think that you're listening to Hubert Nikon or other kinds of spiritual people. And the conclusions they come to, even though they come up with very positivistic quantitative base, they end up with the same kind of conclusions that an Ayn Khan would have,
of course,
or the Buddha. It's a very powerful thing that's happening on the 21st
yes.
century.
It's all interconnected, and we see that. Thank you, Raheem. So here's a quote. It's a beautiful quote. Think of who it might sound like to you. We're all connected to each other biologically, to the earth chemically, and to the rest of the universe atomically. A little bit like Einstein, but it's one of the new physicists, you know, dealing with string theory. Neil deGrasse Tyson, have you heard him? I love his work. One more. I have two more, actually. Our task must be to free ourselves. Our task must be to free ourselves by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature and its beauty. That's Einstein. That's Einstein. Isn't that awesome? I love that quote. Okay, how about this one? Listen to this one. The universe is a symphony of vibrating strings, like music or art. Mathematical equations can have a natural progression and a logic that can evolve, that can evolve rare passions in a scientist. Although the lay public considers mathematical equations to be rather opaque. I'll let you know when we're breaking into small discussion groups, okay? It's not yet, okay? Although the lay public considers mathematical equations to be rather opaque, to a scientist, an equation is very much like the movement of a larger symphony. Simplicity, elegance. These are the qualities that have inspired some of the great artists to create their masterpieces. And they are precisely the same qualities that motivate scientists to search for the laws of nature. Like a work of art or a haunting poem, equations have beauty and rhythm all their own. Now to our panel of experts.
It sounded like Pythagoras, but he wouldn't say it that way.
He would agree with me, but it's Pythagorean thinking.
Yeah.
It's Michio Kaku, again, one of those new thinkers. Beautiful. Okay. So I'm going to read shall I read a little bit more? Do we want to go to a practice? Yeah.
Keep reading.
And then we'll just kind of end and go deep into a practice. How about that? Valley 2. So we're on our quest, right? I'm searching for something. I'm going to go after it. I don't even know what it is, but I'm going to go and I'm going to try and I'm going to learn and I'm searching after some sort of knowledge, which of course, let me give you a secret, is to know thyself. That truth is the important thing. But we go into the Valley of Love, okay? I could start singing here, searching for love in all the wrong places. Okay. Okay. And when he, man, woman, has searched enough and found something satisfying, a man still cannot enjoy the satisfaction unless there is one faculty in play, and that is the faculty of love and devotion. Well, we think it's with a person, but it's not necessarily so. Do we not see in our everyday life that people of great intellect and wide interest very often seem to miss something? When it happens with a couple, that one is very intellectual. The other may feel there is something lacking to make their lives complete. That intellect alone is not enough. What is it? It's the heart. Heart speaks to heart. Talking about that earlier too. Heart speaks to heart. It is the heart which balances life, and the absence of heart keeps life dry. So this is, I think, a beautiful symbol also, that Murshid has given us the symbol of the heart with two wings. We often hear it described by Anayat Khan as independence and indifference. Okay? This independence and indifference, whoa, those words really catalyze people too. But you have to understand them in the context of Murshid. But here it is also, we could say, knowledge and love. They both go hand in hand. Like Einstein's quote, this great knowledge, but understanding that things are connected. And by widening our circles of compassion, we come to a sense of beauty and harmony. So this is really, I think, very key. So now, but we're now entering our third valley, and I think this is maybe our last valley for today, so I hope you're all quick studies. I will test you tomorrow, so don't show up if you don't remember it. I can email you. I can email you the teachings if you want to study. They'll be online, by the way, so anyone that wants to, we usually do video too, but here we don't have the technology, so we'll have the audio along with the outline and the teachings and references and things that I've used. So you can, maybe Karima Gita, if you could write your email down, print it please legibly and give it to Karima Gita, we can make sure you get linked in. Knowledge and heart are just like the positive and negative forces. It is these two things which make life balanced. You know, it's like in Tibetan Buddhism, they have very interesting, one could call them unusual, quite remarkable, if not unbelievable, mystical experiences. But it is never taken for granted. There is a scientific application to test it. There's a method. And so there's a great deal of checking. You know, in that path, they say one should know the teacher and the teacher should know the student 12 years or more before they take up the path together. That's really checking someone out. If the heart quality is very strong and intellect is lacking, then life lacks balance. Knowledge and heart quality must be developed together. And therefore, according to Attar, the faculty of devotion or quality of heart is the second valley. And now they're giving a different interpretation of love. Love as devotion. Love as a kind of a sympathy, you know, a sympathetic vibration. And we know that's true, that somehow the heart gets plucked and we start to feel a resonance with a teacher, a teaching, people. The third valley is the valley of knowledge. So what was the first valley?
Quest.
And the second one?
Love.
Okay, and now we're in?
Knowledge.
Perfect. See, look at great students. You must have a good teacher. Murshid is great. He's our teacher. He's not me. I'm just the mouthpiece. Okay. So the third valley is the valley of knowledge, the knowledge which illuminates and comes by the help of the love element and intellect. That is the knowledge which is called spiritual knowledge. Without a development of love quality, man is incapable of having that knowledge. There are fine lights and shades in one's life which cannot be perceived and fully understood without having touched the deeper side of life. And that's the devotional side. So it's like this fineness of... Murshid also talks about it in a relationship to vibration and breath. You know, that's there's one of the secrets to so much emphasis, or hopefully in your practice, on breath practices. To develop that capacity of breath in its wideness, in its depth, in its fineness, in its strength, in its receptivity. And that, of course, is the great secret of the healing ceremony, because it is the current of breath that carries thought. It's the current of breath that directs healing. Don't have to rub anybody or touch anybody. They can be across the planet, and you can touch them. But that's a very fine development. And it's through a kind of rigorous practice, like practicing the musical scales, we develop the breath in a rhythmic way too. We have to have a constant rhythm. That is a way that we understand our rhythm and a contrary or different rhythm that's come to us. Then we know this is mine, that is another. And one can decide whether to let that penetrate, guard, sympathize, and influence. This is the work of the mystic in life. It transcends words and it transcends actions. It becomes very fine and very subtle. The person who has never in his life been wholly grateful, completely grateful, cannot know what it is. You know, they do know now scientifically that Dr. Emoto, that does the scientific experiments with water, the two most beautiful formations that are made in the water crystals are when the word love is written on a vial, and also gratitude. Remember, we're mostly water. Murshid always says, even Murshid to diet. It is a consideration, by the way, not to just say Hadayat, Hadayat, Murshid Hadayat. Yes, we might be familiar with each other, but in public it's important to honor that person, not just casually, Hadayat, you know, whatever. And those know what I mean, I think. I was having, some of you know this, I have often an expansion of energy that is a capacity that's very hard for my body to cope with. And a little bit, when I first met Murshid Hadayat, I was going to test him. I thought, no, he seems kind of conservative, and you know, he's a man dressed in his suit and cufflinks and tie, and you know, he just seems so proper. Is he really a mystic? I mean, I know he's the son of Hazrat and Icon, but really? So I was trying to explain this to him. It didn't take very many words. He knew exactly what I meant. And he said, Nuria, it's a matter of compression. Like the compression. And he said, he gave the prescription of breath, the stretch breath, which I've shared with some of you, which expands the capacity. And he also said, even silently, the repetition of the zikr of Hazrat Icon starts to circulate through your blood, through all the cells, and changes the vibration and develops a capacity. So when you feel nervous or anxious too, that's a clue for you. Or you have an anxiety about something you're about to take up, or even when one feels very tired and they feel limited in their capacity, this breath, this stretch breath, where you just expand, the exhalation, ascending by 2 beats, and then come back, beginning with the breathing in 4 and out 6, in 4, out 8, in 4, out 10, all the way up to any 20 something, and then come back again. You see, it is amazing. It makes you so you can do almost anything. And of course, we know that great story of Murshid Sam, that rock, remember? Where Murshid Vir told that stone, that story about that huge boulder that they were trying to move, and that was the breath. He just was like, and they used the breath.
Another one with Haridas, they were asking, moving rocks out of the river. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's a yogi who's also mastered the breath. He's a little video guy. I mean, just tiny. He's moving the largest boulders. How does he do that? He's not muscular.
No, it's the breath. It's totally the breath. Do you remember those yogis in Rishikesh? It might sound obscene to you, but really, to prove their strength, they are very thin, you know, because they're yogis and they do a lot of yogic work, and they yes, I am.
Yes.
And they, I am talking huge boulders, aren't I? Am I making this up? You two have seen it.
I've seen it. Yeah.
And with their penis erect, they squat down and they have this string tied and they go like this and they lift these huge boulders. Yeah, you should look online. There's probably something. It's true.
It's probably on YouTube.
It's probably on YouTube, but I'm not making it up.
While we're talking, Murshid Sam really summarized exactly what you're saying, Attar and Zarathustra, where he said two parts bhakti, one part prajna. He's saying the formula for us is two parts love, one part wisdom. Because if you get too much wisdom, then it also is kind of a dry and brittle.
Yep.
Or that gushy love quality. Two parts love, one part wisdom.
Yeah, thank you. Let me just skim and see if there's anything else. So just, this is a really pithy part, because Murshid Anayat Khan talks a lot about the nobility of the soul. You know, that really is also a really important part of his teachings. It's the democracy of the personality and the nobility of the soul. So how do we negotiate all these attitudes, including one's own, while uncovering the true nobility, the true essence? The kings and queens, we talked about that earlier today. So he says, I've lost my place, hold on. Okay. For all the noble qualities which are hidden in the soul will bring forth and blossom when love helps them and nurtures them. Man may have a great deal of good in him, and he may be very intelligent, but as long as his heart is closed, he cannot show that nobleness, that goodness which is hidden in his heart. And the psychology of heart is such that once one begins to know it, one realizes that life is a continual phenomena. Seek to know that which transpires behind that which appears. This is the phenomena of illusion. What is the deeper meaning of all of that? What is the divine impulse in all of that? If one can do that, then at every moment life becomes a miracle. A searchlight is thrown upon human nature and all things become clear. That one does not ask for any phenomena or miracle. It is a miracle in and of itself. What one calls telepathy, thought reading, or clairvoyance And all such things come by themselves when the heart is open. We feel it. We don't think it. We feel it. Talked about that today too. Okay. So I would like for us to share in this Wazifa, because again, I do think it's important to do our practices and studies in English. I think it's important to magnetize that language. I've said it a bazillion times. And we know that we've had great thinkers and writers that have done that. Anaya Khan's one of them, of course, and Mahatma Gandhi's another one, Sri Aurobindo's another one. They were purposefully moving away from their native tongues and working with English. So it's important to give that vibration, I think, to English. However, sometimes the intellect can get in the way. And if we can set up the vibration that links sympathetically to that more ancient sound code, so to speak, something can unlock in us that we can't think about. It just happens, right? Like, I don't know what happened, but something happened, you know, something's changed. Okay. So the two wasivas are wasi and Aleem. And I read a little bit, and I'm reading from, and again, I'll reference this online, because I think that book, The Physicians of the Heart, is a wonderful resource for study, but not self-medicating. Okay, oh, like, that sounds good, I think I'll take that. That's me, I'm gonna do that too. Can get either very sick or very drunk, either one. Okay. So this is from Physicians of the Heart, and this is a beautiful chronic verse that's quoted there, and it says, whatever and whichever way you turn, there is the very face of Allah. For Allah is Al-Wasi and Al-Aleem. Infinitely embracing, is that me? Wasi is infinitely embracing. It's almost like, again, looking at that sky. It's including everything, but does it even end? We've come to find out, no, it's self-creating itself. Both the future and the past is in front of us. How's that for David Bohm? And Aleem is the all-knowing one. Okay. So I will read a little bit about that as well. I'll read more. The word translated, this is Wasi, the word translated as surround or surrounds is Al-Wasi. The physical image here is that of a womb. Womb, W-O-M-B. It is in an encompassing, comprehending, and surrounding. It is also in a well-known prayer, O Allah, surround us with your compassion. O Allah, surround us with your compassion. Al-Wasi is all surrounding, embracing, expansion. So if you're feeling that constriction again, you might talk to teachers about Wasi. Okay, no separation, no this or that. It's this and that. I'm holding it all in this, you know, womb of compassion that's infinite. Wasi involves the idea of feminine and masculine. At first we may only be able to experience Al-Wasi through the female, because when the absolute descends for the female, her experience usually becomes womb-like. And when the absolute descends in the male, it generally becomes for him an expansive feeling of infinity. It's a different experience. It's interesting also, just to liken this maybe to something more applicable in the discipline of art and design. When I'm working with visual languages with students, when I was at the Art Institute at least, we used to come up with words, For example, one was pride. And I am telling you so consistently, the female students created something that was indeed more womb-like or shrouded in some way, like something behind something else, okay? And the men invariably, excuse me, always had something that was quite erect. Okay, so this is also what Murshid is talking about here. Okay, and these were a number of Murshids, of course, Pir Shabda, Murshid Wali Ali, Imam Bilal Hyde, a lot of people coming together to make this text. At first, we may only be able to experience Al-Wasi through the female, because when the absolute descends for the female, her experience becomes womb-like, and when the absolute descends in the male, it generally becomes for him an expansive feeling of infinity. The practice of Ya-Wasi, we always proceed with Ya, meaning, oh dear, I'll offer my homage and my respect to you. Ya, Wasi would be helpful for those who have fears of envelopment. Fears of having a relationship, or fears fears of surrendering. Through invocation of this sacred name, they can overcome being smothered and instead allow themselves to be truly embraced. It's falling into the arms of the beloved. It's called faith. It's called trust. And now Alim, so we're getting this intellectual part, and hopefully we'll have the feeling, the heart will open to these vibrations, but it's good perhaps for you to know. So Alim, Al-Alim is the omniscient knowledge of God. Its ultimate meaning is all-inclusive. So all-encompassing and all-inclusive, how beautiful, right, together. Okay, Al-Alim means the emanation of knowledge that reaches everything without exception. So it can penetrate. In other places of Murshid's teaching, he talks about how our suffering comes from our inability to penetrate. To penetrate and really understand a situation or a person or what is happening, a circumstance, that it's lack of concentration to be able to penetrate that. And that from that arises suffering, he says. But back to this. Back to the physicians of the heart. Al-Alim means the emanation of knowledge that reaches everything without exception, considering all of its various forms. Al-Alim is mentioned in the Quran more than any other single attribute of God. Okay? Alim, Salim, Halim. We see it, that root is in all of those words. Ilm. Ilm. I mean, that's it's a consonant-based language, Arabic is. So, ilm, I-L-M, is the root, and you see that in all of those words, and many, many more. Pir Vilayat, this might illuminate Wasi also in retreat with him. He would give us this, we would do zikr a lot in its positive and negative form. One form, the negative form, is to eradicate qualities of the personality that are seeking transformation. The misidentification of self, right, Ali Khadr? So we misidentify with who we really are by identifying with these other things. So he would have us do the negative form of the zikr that would help cleanse that. And when we did the ill, Allahu, I mean, he really would give us that image of like hitting a rock, shatter one's ideal on the rock of truth, and that all of that would shatter and spread out into the infinite. Those qualities that we're needing to, or impressions that we're needing to be released. And then we would do that for days and days. I mean, all day. So we started at 6 in the morning and went till at least 10 at night, right? And then it would come to the positive form of zikr. And he said, this is the wasi. So where one is up, and he would, you know, use the word centripetal and centrifugal and all this, but you know, one was like this idea of everything kind of getting sucked out. And then the other one is like was like drawing it in, which of course is the breath, right? And so he would say, and as you do la la, you are gathering all the noble qualities that are inherently yours from all of the infinite universes. With what, and you're concentrating on wasi while you're saying that. And then el, you're releasing them to infuse your being with it. Allahu. Beautiful description of zikr. Zikr is a real deep and very personal practice. And we have to a chance to do it here in public with each other. But if you're really feeling it, you're not paying attention to what others are doing. You're right here. And it's not a show or a display. It's prayer. Yawasi. Yali. So wasi is where sort of expanding outward, so let your awareness be like the child. Where is the sky and where does it begin, where does it end? And then with Aleem, so you're going to, these vibrations, I'm spending a little bit of time, but you'll experience it. With Aleem, please let that finish with and concentrate then here at the center of the forehead, and perhaps imagine that five-pointed star that we see in the Sufi symbol radiating just points of light, that divine omniscient knowledge that really can penetrate all things, revealing all things. Okay, so there's no need to rush it. But my mouth is a little bit dry. Is there any more water left here? Please, thank you. It's okay. Look at it. So just take a really big breath, fill yourself. Yawasi. With wasi, again, it's as if you have this soft, you don't have to do this eyes open, but you, if you want to, you can, but it's like this soft expanse of awareness, 360 degrees, just all embracing. And then with Aleem, you're going to come here with your eyes even. They're going to be directed towards the center of your forehead where that star is radiating light. And you can even expand that while we're saying the Wazifa, the sacred name, where at each end of the star are infinite rays of light shining outward, and with at the end of each infinite ray of light is another star with infinite rays of light, and so on and so forth, to fill all of space and time. But it's connected to this center for higher wisdom and knowledge. And let the sound be emanating from there. There, you know, we think we breathe in and out our nose. No, we breathe in and out of these centers as well. So activate that, okay?
Yeah.
And you can allow these stars with ever-expanding rays of light. This is like the Nur ala Nur that's talked about by the great poet Suwardi, the light upon the light. So as you start to draw in that vision, allow those points of light to draw towards you those qualities and attributes throughout infinite time, infinite space, infinite wisdom, infinite love, infinite knowledge, to come fully present, fully awakened, and fully alive through your being. And let this star at the center of the forehead move down through the back of your palate and reside at the heart. And allow a crescent moon to appear underneath that, as if it's holding and supporting the star, and at the same time receptive to that divine light. And encompassing them, that wasi, that all-encompassing one of the heart, the great heart. And from that, the beautiful wings, knowledge and love, wisdom and devotion, independence, beyond any dependency that may arise in one's being that confines us to limited thinking, confines us to conventions that are limiting by others or self-limiting, so that we can be free. And a kind of also indifference, not an indifference that's cold and unfeeling, but one that allows everything to be as it is. And notice how seemingly even inanimate objects start to hum this wazifa. Listen to the refrigerator. Listen, I'm serious. Wasi alim, wasi alim. Listen to it. See it? Wasi. And then it goes alim higher. Wasi. You can change the vibration of everything. Can you hear it?
It even extends that.
It does, doesn't it? It's
No, it's done.
Yeah. It's ready for the closing prayer. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. If what we've done here has been a benefit, may it benefit all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here and sharing.